fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. American Adversaries, Drive Time.
Ladies and gentlemen, new information in the George Zimmerman case has been uncovered. We now know that all racism is caused by rain. That's right. Rain. The state star witness says she knew there was a racial element in the meeting of these two individuals because it was raining. I don't get it either. Now, if this was the prosecution's chance to shine, I think they've learned that no matter how much polish you use, you can't shine rust. My co-host isn't rusty. Not rusty a bit. He's oiled up and ready to go. Christopher Hart!
All right. Thank you so very much, Lair Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us this evening. You are listening to the American Adversaries. It is drive time, and there's some clouds here and about, some sprinkles. I don't know that there's actually any rain going on, but just be careful if you're out there on the road.
There'd be some racism.
Okay, yeah, if it started raining.
There is. Don't get wet.
Well, let's see how what Jeff Dowdy, our expert on the Zimmerman trial, thinks about that. And we'll go to him in just a moment. Okay, yeah, we're working right now to get him on the line. In the meantime, let me just once again thank you for being with us this afternoon. And we have another guest who's going to be with us in studio for the whole hour today. And he's been on our show a couple of times in the past, and boy, do we ever have a lot to talk about today. I'm talking about Steve Gushov, who's a lawyer and works for the Liberty Council. Once again, thank you, Steve, for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm amazed you guys keep inviting me back.
No, you're fine for us. We're happy to have you.
Absolutely. Once again, just for folks out there who don't know briefly, what's the Liberty Council all about?
Liberty Council is a nonprofit Christian law firm, and so we defend lots of cases involving religious liberty, religious freedom, the sanctity of life and personhood, and the traditional family. And based on what we just heard from the Supreme Court yesterday, boy, does the traditional family need a lot of help and a lot of defense these days. People want more info, our website is at lc.org. That's lc.org.
That's simple enough to remember. And Jeff is, we're having trouble getting him online. He's probably watching the proceedings going on in the court right now.
I was listening on the way in.
Yeah, so as soon as we get a hold of Jeff Dowdy, we will get an update on the Zimmerman case today.
Now, did you see what I referred to in my opening, Chris, the little exchange there that they had with the witness?
Well, I know that, no, I did not see much of it today. I do know that the witness that they ended yesterday with and started today with, the girl who was talking with Trayvon the night all
Rachel.
This went down, once again proved to be a sketchy witness, let's just put it that way. And so we'll see. That's the way we see it, though. We always have to remember that we're not on that jury. And we're not seeing it the way maybe they are seeing it. All we can say is what we see, and that's what we do here. And we'll be doing that with Jeff Dowdy here shortly. Okay. Steve Gushov, real quickly, he's going to be speaking Sunday. It's going to be downtown in front of the United States Courthouse. And by the way, folks, that's at 401 West Central. It's just on the west side of I-4 on Central Avenue there. And it's going to be at from 2 to 3:30 p.m., the Fortnight for Freedom rally. And that should be what's that going to be all about, first of all?
Well, it's going to be about a lot of things based on all the scandals and all the Supreme Court decisions we've had recently. But what it is, Fortnight for Freedom, is going to be a gathering, a rally to talk about religious freedom and, frankly, the decline of religious freedom in this country. And, again, it's going to be 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon right out in front of the U.S. Courthouse in downtown Orlando. The Eastside Orlando Tea Party is presenting this event, and it should be a great time. I've spoken at other rallies outside of the U.S. Courthouse. We're expecting a really good crowd, so I'd encourage everyone that's out there that's listening to us right now to come on out Sunday at 2 o'clock. I'm going to be speaking at the event. I'll be speaking particularly about the state of religious freedom and religious liberty in the United States and its decline, because, frankly, you know, when you look at things like Obamacare, when you look at things like, you know, these two terrible same-sex marriage decisions yesterday, these all go to the heart and the issue of religious liberty more than anything else, and how this administration, this Supreme Court, is trampling on the rights of Americans with regard to religious liberty.
Okay, once again, folks, you can see Steve speak this Sunday from 2 to 3:30 p.m., and I believe you can park right across the street on I-4, can't you?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, and that's the Fortnight for Freedom rally right across. It's going to be at the United States Courthouse at 401 West Central downtown, sponsored by the Eastside Tea Party. Okay, we'll get back to Jeff. We'll get back to Steve in just a moment, because we have Jeff Dowdy now with us, and I want to go to him to get the latest on the George Zimmerman trial. Jeff Dowdy, a prominent criminal defense attorney here in Central Florida, thank you once again for being with us tonight.
No problem. How you guys doing?
We're doing excellent. We're doing excellent. How is the trial going?
Well, it's been kind of slow today. Ms. Gentel spent most of the morning, in fact, all the entire morning under witness stand, and some of the afternoon, and she was just still confusing, hard to understand. Not much more came out of her other than, you know, she admitted she would change her story repeatedly. And
well, I think that one thing did come out, and at least the defense got to bring it up, and Lair sort of alluded to it, but that she actually said on the witness stand, as the I believe it was Don West cross-examining her, he said, how did creepy white ass, a creepy right. ass cracker, is I believe exactly how she said, a creepy ass cracker. So basically what he got her to say was, if anybody was injecting race into this whole thing from the very start, it was Trayvon.
Right. And she also admitted that she left that account out to her attorney and Trayvon's mother when she did her interview with the prosecutors and law enforcement. She never told them that.
Absolutely. And the part that really astounded me, Jeff, was at the beginning. I was watching before I had to go to work, and that's when he was asking her what made this a racial situation. And the first thing she said was, the rain. Remember that? I mean, my head snapped onto my and the questioner was like, "What? It was raining."
That is what lawyers would say is non-responsive.
Yeah, and she seemed to have a lot of answers that were actually pretty non-responsive, if you will.
Right, you could tell she was coached last night. The way she kept saying "sir," and she was very mundane, and so she talked to a criminal attorney in Miami, according to what Natalie Jackson had said yesterday, not about her testimony, but basically how to act better in court, because obviously yesterday was a disaster for her.
Right, how to be a better witness, per se. And then we moved on, and it's her 9/11 call where we hear the screams for help. She testified as well.
Right, and she was a very good witness.
Very good.
In fact, she kind of flustered the state.
Yes.
Seeing that the end of her testimony, the state was attacking her and saying, you know, because she really basically became a defense witness for us.
And as a matter of fact, they excused the jury from the courtroom and continued to question her, and Robert Zimmerman's name came up.
Exactly. And what happened is that somehow the prosecutor found her Twitter account, which she's never tweeted on ever, and saying that, you must be following Robert Zimmerman. He didn't understand how Twitter worked. And
exactly.
Fortunately for him, it was out of the presence of the jury.
Well, I have to admit, I'm the same as this lady.
Both of us.
I've got a Twitter account. I don't know how to use it. I'm sorry, folks.
Well,
I have to admit
fine.
That. I'm
but
sorry.
You don't go into a murder trial and start questioning somebody about something you know nothing about.
Right.
And that's what he did.
And she was excellent at pointing that out. She didn't look like she was hedging or trying to, you know, give anybody in line or whatever. It was strictly, look, I don't understand it either. If you can tell me, and he couldn't.
I know, I get these things.
She was right on point. You could tell she was open and honest with him. Hey, you tell me what I'm doing.
Yeah, I know, because I get these things from Twitter and my email, and I look in there, and I got all these followers, and I'm going, golly, I wish I could know how to say something to them, you know. But hopefully one day Tyler and Nick around here will lead me through this maze. And so basically, is that how the day ended? What was the final action by the court?
There's a witness on the stand right now. Her name is Selma Mora. She used to live in the condos, but she speaks Spanish, so her testimony is kind of slow. But she's really had nothing to offer. She's basically a washout, which is probably an improvement ending the day for the state compared to the last 2 days.
Has the state played their biggest cards? Have they played their aces already?
Let's hope not. I mean, so far, I mean, they have to prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt, and so far, it's just a bunch of mush. I mean, you don't know what happened. You certainly don't know.
Well, the rumor was Rachel was their star witness, and if she was their star witness, my gosh.
that's a hard reach if she's their star witness. She was supposed to be, though. You're right there. She was supposed to be.
Now, that we had been told that coming up here pretty soon is going to be the videotape of George Zimmerman's deposition. I thought it was going to be today. You think it'll be tomorrow?
It's got to be coming. I don't know how many other eyewitnesses they have. Not eyewitnesses, but actually people who live there. Heard something or were part of it. But, yeah, it's got to be coming. It's got to be coming. Today's pace was very slow.
Jeff, let me ask you this. Do you think the prosecution is going to call the fella? Are they obligated to call all the eyewitnesses, including the fella who used the kickboxing terminology, ground and pound and all this, and he saw Trayvon grounding and pounding Zimmerman? Do you think the prosecution...
He's a defense witness.
That's what I mean. Do you think the prosecution will call him to try to neutralize him somehow?
It's a strategy. They might, there's 200 witnesses listed, but as you know, we all experienced attorneys know, the 200, maybe 50 will testify. It's possible they could call them, and there's rumors around the courthouse today that the defense case is actually going to take longer than the state's presentation, which I think is an outstanding move. But they're saying that the defense case will take longer than the prosecution's case, which is very unusual.
And I understand that Mark O'Meara was prepared with all the proper photographs and actually got in certain things during the questioning to imprint on the jury's mind, sort of already developing his case.
Yes, he did something that was very seasoned and very good. He asked the witness, Jenna Laura, she said, yes, it sounded like somebody was, screaming and calling out for their life, somebody that was in dire need of help. And then Mark picks up the picture of the back of the head of George Zimmerman, all bloody, and say, does this look like the picture of somebody that might be screaming for help? And right away, the prosecutor screamed, objection, objection, but the damage was done. The jurors saw it. And you could tell in the courtroom the jurors were writing notes at that point. They were really grasping. Even though it was impermissible, they got it in.
Yeah, it's like you can't unring the bell, I think, is one of the phrases.
That, a great move. Yeah, it was a good move by him.
Listen, Jeff, Brad is calling with a question for you.
Sure.
Okay, so let's go to Brad now. And once again, folks, you can call as well. 407-774-8255 is the number. Brad, thanks for calling and your question for Jeff Dowdy.
Yes, Jeff. After hearing the couple days of testimony by Rachel, I guess the girlfriend of the deceased Trayvon Martin, I got the impression that it's very disturbing that we found out things now, like the remark made by Trayvon calling him a creepy cracker or something, and then the several inconsistencies leads me to believe that there's like a web of not just falsifications, but deceit and omission and trying to paint a picture. I'm getting that impression. I wanted to know if you were also getting that impression, and if so, is that going to play a major part going forward?
And let me add this, Jeff. Is that typical in a case like this?
Yes, and that goes all the way to Shelley Zimmerman. Perjury is committed every day in that courthouse. And what Rachel did, she admitted that she lied on numerous occasions. She admitted to it, and the jury knows it, and it was brought out. And the fact that she even withheld certain important things about the ass cracker and those sort of things because Mrs. Martin's mom was right next to her. I mean, that's highly unusual in itself. Yeah, she made so many inconsistencies. I don't know how you could trust her testimony.
Well, also, Jeff, her frame of mind. Her frame of mind was that ass cracker was not a racial term.
Yeah,
and the N-word. Her frame of mind was the N-word was not a racial term. However, somehow during this phone conversation where she never heard George Zimmerman utter a word, I'm thinking, she determined it was a racial situation.
It was the rain there.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I actually
don't be me.
I actually think that there's a bigger cultural thing at play there.
That's right.
Well, that word is, you know, being I represent a lot of criminal people, obviously, and that word, the N word, is used sporadically. I mean, not sporadically.
Liberally.
That's a correct word.
Yeah.
Liberally. It's used a lot.
Real quick, Larry and I were talking after the show yesterday, you know, with all this NSA scandal going on and everything. Yeah. There's a guy here in Florida who is asking that the court demand or get him access to NSA records because he thinks that it will exonerate him. Do you see
actual
this?
Actual phone recording.
Yeah. Good luck.
Okay, you say good luck on that, huh?
Yeah. Good luck on that one. That ain't happening.
Why not? I mean, if the NSA has this information, how can the courts not say, we demand this information to try this case? Right there would be, we've got the call right here, folks.
There, give Obama a call.
There you go. There you go. Jeff, can you take one more question?
Sure, no problem.
All right, from Pasquale. Pasquale, do we have enough time, Jeff?
Pasquale, thank you for the pizza the other night. My kid enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Pasquale. We really appreciate that. Real quickly, your question for Jeff.
You're welcome.
Okay.
My question is, anybody ask about when they scream, yelp, yelp, with the low, low voice, and they say it's a kid. Anybody try when you have water in your throat, try to scream, you act like a kid. The nose was broken, the blood will go through the throat, and then try to scream, automatically come, help, 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 like a kid.
Do you think there'll be any testimony along those lines, Jeff? He makes a good point.
It is a good point. You don't know. I don't know what the defense has lined up for as far as the voice goes. But, yeah, I mean, the person said that, too. She was credible. She was being honest. She couldn't tell anything. But, yeah, it's a good point, Pasquale. Very good.
Okay. All right, Jeff, great job once again today, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You are the man, guy. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Okay, guys.
Thanks for bringing us up to date and helping us understand exactly what's going on. Okay,
thanks, buddy, folks,
that is Jeff Dowdy, a prominent criminal defense attorney here in Central Florida who's handled many high-profile cases, including death penalty cases.
And, Chris, he's been right again and again and again.
From the very start. All right, folks, if you really want the expert and the man who knows what's going on, you can't do any better than Jeff Dowdy. Okay. And you can't do any better than the Liberty Counsel and Steve Gushaw, because we're going to be talking about the Supreme Court decisions coming up next.
For 16 years, Cafe Positano has been famous for blending their traditional Italian family recipes with the latest cuisines. They offer affordable fine dining in the banquet room and more casual dining in the main area. From pizza to specialty dishes and tender, juicy prime rib, everything is made fresh daily, even our sauces. And owner Pasquale Barba promises you'll want to return. Located 4 miles west on I-4 on 436, phone 407-774-8080.
Cafe Positano is true Italian food, e lo prometto.
Ho! Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I took on the Iron Sheik from Iran. I took on Nikolai Volkov from the USSR. I took on Andre the Giant from France. I just want you to know, time for more political mayhem with the American adversaries. Tough guy, how about a ho?
Oh, and here we go. And once again, congratulations to Michael, who won our free family four-pack of tickets to a Rays game yesterday. And don't forget, folks, we'll be doing that again next Wednesday as well. Okay, we're going to pivot now to talk from talking about a local court case to talking about some Supreme Court cases. And we're going to be doing that with Steve Gushaw from the Liberty Counsel. And once again, folks, you can meet Steve and see him speak this Sunday afternoon from 2 to 3:30 p.m. at the United States Courthouse. That's not the county courthouse, the United States Courthouse, which is on Central Avenue, just on the west side of I-4, right there downtown Orlando, 2 to 3:30. 3:30 p.m. Saturday. Be there. Okay, I think I might ride my bike down there and see what's going
on. Absolutely, that's awesome.
Okay, all right. Real quickly, there have been some big Supreme Court decisions this week. Everybody's focusing on the Gay Marriage Act decisions that came out yesterday. But I want to talk about one first. First of all, there was a racial preference case which had to do with quotas, affirmative action in college admissions, and the Supreme Court basically kicked that back down to the state and didn't do anything with it.
Yeah, then that's exactly it. And frankly, what you're seeing in this court is, in that case, is really no different than what they did in the Proposition 8 case yesterday,
right,
where they punted it. You're not necessarily seeing a whole lot of profiles in courage by this court. I mean, they're the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, granted, some of the decisions that they've been making have been horrendous, but at the same time, they're doing this more and more where they're just punting cases back to the lower courts without offering anything in the way of guidance on them.
And that's absolutely right. We spoke briefly about that yesterday as far as the Prop 8 case, and we'll talk more about that after the break. But before we get into those cases, the DOMA and the Prop 8 case, I want to talk about the voting rights case, because I think that that was actually a huge victory, if you will, for people who believe in securing the right to vote and making sure that voting is a clean and fair and above board process. Oddly enough, the Voting Rights Act had actually been used for a number of years as a tool by the Democrats to make sure that the wrong people were voting, if you will.
Basically, the issue in that case is, are things exactly the same now as they were in 1965? You know, are we the same in this country, particularly in southern states that were the ones that had to toe the line with these different, you know, rules?
And
you know, have they changed? Have they improved? Have things improved racially in the past 48 years? The answer is yes, and that's what the court was looking at. It is not 1965 all over again. Are there still issues? To some extent, but not to the extent that you needed these same elements of the law as had existed for 48 years.
And I think this is good news for two reasons. For one, it does show us that one way or another, some government programs can be ended.
Absolutely. You know,
and that's very encouraging.
Yeah, a lot of them, but this is an example.
But at least some. And when the Voting Rights Act was first passed, it was only supposed to, this particular provision was only supposed to be in effect for 5 years.
Well,
so it's been 50.
And here we are, you know, half a century later.
And basically what John Roberts said is you cannot judge these states, these counties, by the same information, the same data that is 50 years old. You cannot continually do that. But see, that's the liberal mindset. You know, it's this is what happened way back then, so we got to keep the thumbs on you right now. Well, the Supreme Court said no. That's a huge victory for, as I said, people who appreciate the right to vote and that the right people are voting.
That's right, folks, and certain people are screaming about it. We are the American Adversaries. We don't scream or give it to you straight, and we'll be right back.
From Vacation Travel Planners, bringing you the travel deals of the week, like Bahama cruises from $189 per person, Alaska 7-night cruises from $279 per person, plus kids sail free on select dates, 7-night Hawaii cruises from $1,249 per person, plus ask about pre- and post-hotel stays. Princess welcomes its newest ship, the Royal Princess, doing 7-night Eastern Caribbean from $654 per person. Book a balcony or above on Royal Caribbean and receive a complimentary dinner for two. Plus, receive free prepaid gratuities when you book by June 30th. Give us a call at 321-251-4777. That's 321-251-4777. Or visit us at vacationtravelplanners.com. Keep listening for new travel specials every week. Bon voyage!
Yo, it's me, C-C-C, Diamond Dallas Page, the king of Bada Bing, the master of the diamond cutter, the three-time world champion. And you're listening to the American Adversary Drive Time. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Bye!
All right, folks, that's right. That's DDP. And check out that DDP yoga, ddpyoga.com. It's not your mama's yoga, but it is good for you. Okay, folks, real quickly, are you out there and you're in a house and you can't get out from underneath this terrible housing market. Says people say it's improving, but for a lot of us who are out there, a lot of you out there, you can't get out from underneath a house that's getting ready to go in foreclosure. Do you feel overwhelmed, trapped? You want to sell? You need to sell? You can't sell? You've been chasing around a loan modification, but the paperwork keeps getting lost and other excuses? Well, you need to call Housing Relief Group, and it's at no cost to you. And let me just get you the phone number here real quick. Housing Relief Group is 407-255-2412. That's Housing Relief Group at 407-255-2412. Okay, let's get back to Steve Gushoff now, who's with the Liberty Council. We were talking about this Voting Rights Act. And actually, the Supreme Court, you have to understand, when they consider these laws, sometimes the decision is very broad, sometimes they're pretty narrow. In the case of the Voting Rights Act, they struck down actually one provision of the Voting Rights Act. And it had to do with the formula that they used to calculate, you know, how much freedom should be allowed to the localities, the state and local governments to set their own election laws. And that this formula is way out of date because they're using the same information, you know, basically that they used back in the 60s. So they're saying you got to update it. Well, update it is basically makes it obsolete. And that's why so many people in the civil rights community, so-called, are up in arms, because this was an effective tool to keep their thumb on states, mostly in the South, and counties who had made tremendous progress.
Well, you know, here's the deal. It's like I say, it's like, are we looking at the same information, the same statistical information from 1965 as we are today, 48 years later? In other words, if you want to carry forth that argument, the one that the liberals make, as you just stated, then, you know, does that mean that we go back to population records, for instance, in 1965, in terms of establishing how many members of Congress that different states have? I mean, how far do you take this? And remember, too, what they did in that voting rights case is similar to what they did in the Defense of Marriage Act case yesterday, where they only struck down one section. That's precisely what they did yesterday. Now, again, it was egregious what they did yesterday in striking down that one section. But you're right. Sometimes they just take a small bite out of something, whether it's DOMA or the Voting Rights Act,
takes
as opposed to doing everything.
Well, that provision takes the teeth out of it, so to speak. And that's what they did. That's exactly right with the DOMA case. We talked about this case a little bit yesterday. Basically, what they did was, I'll read from the Liberty Council press release here because I think it puts it quite concisely. Justice Kennedy, writing the DOMA Act decision under an equal protection rationale, strikes down Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act, which Section 3 defines marriage as one man and one woman for purposes of federal law and federal benefits, specifically joint federal tax returns, Social Security survivor benefits, and federal employee health insurance and medical benefits. Not at issue in this ruling are the other parts of DOMA, including the section that says states may define their own marriage policy. And in essence, that's what they based the decision on, was more or less states' rights.
Well, here's the thing. It's like there is one small glimmer of hope in the decision they made, as bad as it was, in exactly what you just said, where even after this terrible decision, states still have the right to define marriage policy state by state. There are 38 states right now across the United States, which is more than three-quarters of the country, that define marriage as one man and one woman. The court did not address that issue yesterday. So as bad as it was yesterday, it could have been a lot worse if they had struck down all of DOMA. So every state, whether it's Florida or California or anywhere, still has the right to determine, whether it's a ballot initiative or within their state legislature, how to define marriage. Because this issue, you know, the same-sex marriage issue, there's many different ways of looking at this. We're a nonprofit Christian law firm. So for Christians, for true Christians that believe the Bible, they look to the words of God, of Jesus, of the Apostle Paul, all of whom said in the Bible, marriage is one man and one woman. So from a Christian standpoint, that's the way it is. That's it. There's no arguing that.
Well, if you just look at it from a biological standpoint, if you want to propagate the race and have the race survive, marriage has to be between a man and a woman. Now you can say men and women, or man and women, or men and woman, but nonetheless, you have to have the opposites.
But let's look at that a little bit further. In other words, again, by allowing states to continue to define what is marriage, what is the definition of marriage, that means that people in each state are going to be able to vote on it. So this is a states' rights issue as well. Now, something you said, Chris, is really interesting, because if you look at the decision yesterday, and if you carry it forth consistently, by changing the definition of marriage from one man, one woman to anything beyond that, same-sex marriage, as in this case, that means that polygamists, for instance, now, one man, many women, they have the right legally, consistently, along with what the liberals are saying, to say that they should have, you know, marriage rights as well.
Along with incestual relationships.
If you have an adult brother and sister who say, we love each other, well, you know, who's to say that they don't have the same rights?
Father, daughter,
same
mother, son.
Well, that brings a point to mind. And I meant to bring in my constitutional law book today so I could actually read from the decision. But there was a decision, I believe, in 1878 or something
Utah?
Like that. Reynolds versus U.S. or something like yep. that, where a polygamist was saying, my religion tells me to be a polygamist, and therefore the federal government should leave me alone and let me be a polygamist. And the decision, and I forget which justice wrote the decision, basically said, you can believe anything you want in a religion, but the state has a right to regulate that religion. Let's say you believed in a religion that said going around killing Jews was the right thing to do. The state would not allow that. And then, and so did anybody in this case argue that a Supreme Court decision had already said that the government can say what marriage is? Because in that case, now, they didn't say it was between one man and one woman. The decision said that plural marriage was okay for the government to not allow plural marriages.
Well, because right after that, then in 1885, the Supreme Court itself did define marriage as one man
yes.
and one
they
woman.
Did. Okay,
so
what
they
case
have
was it?
Do you made, I don't remember the name of the case, okay. but it was 1885. So they have it. Said before in their history that marriage is one man and one woman. So, of course, the argument today by the left is that, well, time has changed. This isn't 1885 anymore. We're 100 and almost 30 years, you know, removed from that. All right, well, if you're going to use that argument, then again, you have to look at the fact it's how does this cause a slippery slope? In other words, if you're allowing same-sex marriage, do polygamists, are they going to be allowed as well? Are you going to allow incestuous relationships? Are you
sure.
going to allow children if parents consent, young children? Where does it end if you take this definition of marriage and change it from one man, one woman to anything else beyond that? And so that's one of the things that we have to look at in this case is what does this do? Now, the Prop 8 case to me is even more egregious. Why? Because in Prop 8, you had more than 7 million people in California who voted to define marriage as one man and one woman in California. And the U.S. Supreme Court has basically taken their votes, their ballots, crumpled them up,
mm-hmm.
and thrown them in the trash.
Mm-hmm. Now,
the will of the people means nothing.
Means nothing.
I understand they're going to delay the implementation of this decision for a period of time. Is there another? Did they in the decision yesterday? Because it was a matter of standing and jurisdiction. Did the court give any guidance as to how this case could be reheard? In other words, is there another way to get the standing and to get the jurisdiction to fight against the Supreme Court of California's? Or would it take let's put it this way: if not, then if they reelect a new governor and he's a Republican, can he then go back and relitigate this case?
A new governor or a new attorney general absolutely can do so. Remember that in the Proposition 8 case, the decision striking down Prop 8 by the lower district court in Northern California is the only one that remains in effect. What does this mean? It means that the remaining parts of California are unaffected. What does that mean? It means there's going to be a lot more litigation about this in California, particularly in southern and middle districts of California. So it's still a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
But that's what the Supreme Court does when they punt on an issue such as this.
As a matter of fact, both of these decisions, the Doma decision and the Prop 8 decision, are a boon for the lawyers.
Oh, there's going to be a lot more.
Yeah, the Doma decision, it means that now somebody's going to have to figure out, okay, if a gay couple gets married in California, and then comes to Florida, what's going to happen if they want to get a divorce, if one of them dies, or there's going to be a whole lot of federal benefits? Yeah, so there's going to be a whole lot. They didn't decide anything yesterday, basically,
well,
folks.
Well, another thing that they did not decide yesterday, the court didn't say anything about whether states are required or not required to accept a sister state's policy on same-sex marriage.
That's what I mean.
In other words, if you're legally married, in one state, and you move to another state where there isn't same-sex marriage, the court was silent on that, which means as it stands right now, A does not have to recognize same-sex marriage from State B.
And State of Florida has said they will not. All right, let's go to Rick now, who would like to take issue with some of the things we've been talking about here this afternoon. Thank you for calling this afternoon, Rick. We appreciate you being out there.
Yeah, two things. First, a question and then a statement. What did you think of the ridiculous anti-sodomy laws that government could bust into your home for having gay sex? I was in Texas. I thought that was communistic or fascistic to the extreme. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't believe those laws exist anymore.
No, but they voted
Supreme
them down.
Court has overturned them.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you think it was
Bowers
right
v. Hardwick, if I recall.
Have there been bad laws passed in the past? Obviously, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, your question.
All right. I think this is the last bastion of civil rights, the DOMA. Kennedy said it violates equal protection law. It humiliates children of same-sex parents and tells them their marriage is less worthy than marriage of others. I mean, it does violate equal protection.
Well, let me ask you this. Then do you think that polygamists should be allowed to practice that?
No, I don't.
Because if somebody, let's just say, what's that guy? He's on TV. He's got a TV show. He's got four wives, right?
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, the guy's making money, I guess, on TV for having four wives. I mean, do you think that the same circumstances should apply?
No,
I mean,
what you do is narrow the definition to gay and straight, and then,
But how can you say that? Talk about unconstitutional.
This is why I say marriage really should go back to the biological reason, okay? Because that, in essence, is the only true gauge we can go by. Everything else is all subjective.
That's right. And Rick, we have never been against gay couples being together in any way, shape, or form.
Civil,
we
yeah.
think they should have civil
and I don't have a problem with them filing taxes together.
Yes.
I don't have a problem with the Social Security. That's all fine and dandy. Don't go redefining a word that is so crucial to a social fabric, word of marriage. That's what we're saying.
Semantics, in other words.
No, I don't think it is semantics. I think it's much more than that.
It is, because in the countries that have allowed gay marriage, the number of heterosexual marriage has dropped drastically. It's across the board. Even France right now is going through a struggle with that.
Okay. All right. Well, we do appreciate you being out there, Rick. Thank you very much for your call and the points that you brought up. But, he just goes to prove the slippery slope.
He actually argued against himself, because it's like, again, if you change the definition from one man, one woman to anything else, you open up the floodgates to same-sex marriage, polygamy, incestuous relationships.
Heterosexual marriage is okay, and homosexual marriage with two people is okay.
I mean, even liberals would say that's absurd.
Yeah,
that's right. Okay, all right, but that's just, once again, he demonstrated the slippery slope. Okay, folks, we're going to go ahead and take our last break for this hour. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Steve Gouche. And if you'd like to call, 407-774-8255 is the number. And yes, that pizza was delicious the other night, Pasquale Cafe Positano. Thank you.
For 16 years, Cafe Positano has been famous for blending their traditional Italian family recipes with the latest cuisines. They offer affordable fine dining in the banquet room and more casual dining in the main area. From pizza to specialty dishes and tender, juicy prime rib, everything is made fresh daily, even our sauces. And owner Pasquale Barba promises you'll want to return. Located 4 miles west on I-4 on 436, phone 407-774-8080.
Cafe Positano is true Italian food, e lo prometto.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's because our graceless leader, Barack Gumby Obama, is over in Africa. And by the way, folks, he's bragging over there that he's not going to Kenya, I guess, so he's not going to drop by and give his half-brother a few bucks, you know, the one that lives in the hut there.
Your old hometown.
He's not even going to drop off one of those things where he can listen to his speeches like he gave the Queen over there. But anyway...
That didn't
he's
work
bragging,
for her either.
Yeah, he's bragging that they're going to help set up a voter program in Kenya where they have to have an ID card to be able to vote. Well, wouldn't it be nice if they would back that plan here in the United States?
Oh, what's up with
like
that?
Like a voter ID with a photograph on it. Hey, novel idea. Yeah, work in Kenya. Just won't work in the United States. They don't know how to do things over there. Okay, folks, we got a couple of callers on the line. Before we get to them, I want to take up something with Steve Gushaw because this... When we talk about polygamy, there is a group out there that you better believe is watching all of this very closely. And I'm not talking about the Mormons.
And not talking about Nambla.
I'm talking about Muslims. Because Muslims believe in polygamy. It is actually called for in their religion. And hey, if we're just going to toss aside Supreme Court decisions from the 1800s, why not let's just go ahead and toss aside this polygamy one while we're at it. And then just, you know...
So folks, while we're at it, just get rid of marriage altogether.
Well, that's
what they want.
No, that's not what they want. They just want to.
There are many.
I think that's what they want.
There are many devout Muslims who have up to four different wives, and they're going to come over here now, and that's going to be their argument. Is like if marriage is defined as anything beyond one man, one woman, then hey, we have the right to be married to multiple women as well.
You're wrong.
That's coming down the pike.
You're wrong about one thing. They're not coming over here. They're
true.
Already
right.
Here. They're already here.
I okay. Stand corrected.
All right, let's go to the phone
and
calls.
Why would you ever want more than one?
Let's go to Sharon first. She's been holding the longest. Thank you for calling tonight, Sharon.
Sharon will back me up.
we appreciate you being out there. Your question, please.
Well, it's not really a question. I just wanted to make a couple of observations.
Yeah.
One of them is that people keep calling marriage a civil right. I believe that marriage is a privilege. It is not a right.
That's right.
The government cannot guarantee you a spouse, nor are they in the matchmaking business.
That's right.
In the same way, a driver's license is a privilege. It's not a right.
And you have to get a license to get married.
And the previous caller who said, oh, no, polygamy should not be allowed, but gay marriage should be. And Dr. Gene Robinson says the same thing. Oh, no, we'll stop at polygamy. So what I'm gathering from that is that the LGBT community is the only community that is allowed to define marriage, and no one else is allowed to.
Yeah.
It's the height of inconsistency with that last caller said. You're absolutely right, Sharon, because, look, if you're on the left and you believe in same-sex marriage, then if you're going to be intellectually and legally consistent in what you believe, then you've got to be for polygamy. You've got to be for incestuous relationships being allowable between adults. You've got to be for parents
be
allowing
okay.
young children to be married if they give their consent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You're exactly right.
That's right. Well, what we saw is a court that really wasn't using any common sense or any Bible, if you will, for a guide.
Scalia made sense. That was about it.
That's about the size of it. Sharon, I'm sorry. We have to move on. I want to get to Roger, and we've got Nostra Dennis holding on as well. Roger, thank you for your call this afternoon. And your comments, please.
Real quick, the DOMA thing, it just reflects on federal benefits. It has nothing to do with gay marriage versus not. It just says, look, if you're out there and you have a relationship and what I call financial interest, you're now entitled to federal benefits. Well, congratulations. That's not going to make your marriage any better or worse. And everyone that's argued with me about gay marriage, I asked them the same question. What year was gay marriage made unlawful?
Made it what?
Unlawful. It has never been. You're absolutely
it's
right.
It's never been made unlawful.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, but you know, here's a point about DOMA. In an offhanded sort of way, and we talked about this a little bit, it wasn't really a victory for the gay community.
It was. I believe that it was in terms of allowing federal benefits,
but it didn't
probably as much
right.
as they wanted. But it's still
right.
more of a victory for the gay community than not. It's definitely not
true.
A defeat.
The doors open a bit.
But the issue in terms of defining gay marriage or allowing it or whatnot, again, that goes back to the issue of states' rights, because states are giving their citizens the right to vote and say, citizens, do you want marriage to be just one man or one woman or not? Even Chris Christie said that today.
Yeah.
He's gone to the left, but all of a sudden he got conservative today and said that he thought that DOMA was a terrible decision. you know, and that it should be, you know, decided state by state. And again, my heart really goes out to the 7 million plus people in California who voted to define marriage as one man, one woman, and to prohibit same-sex marriage, and the Supreme Court yesterday trampled on their ballots.
Well, the majority.
The Supreme Court, in its own way, on the one hand gave, and on the other hand it took away. On the one hand, in the DOMA Act, it said it reaffirmed states' rights. But in the
Prop 8, being silent.
Right,
correct.
Exactly. But in the Prop 8 case, it kind of took away states' rights.
Exactly.
Because it took away what the people
by
of California
nothing.
Had decided.
The question is, was it just for politics? Really, I kind of wonder
yes,
sometimes
I
with our Supreme
so.
Court.
Because if you go back to the Obamacare case last year or the same-sex marriages yesterday, what you're seeing more and more every year is the increased politicization. I don't think I said the politicization of the Supreme Court. But what it does is when it decides that it's going to make policy and going to take the place of the voters, it delegitimizes the court as well.
Well, in both cases yesterday, I shouldn't say both cases. In the California case, I think they did just that. In the DOMA case, I think they showed a great... I don't think either case was really the ideal case from their perspective to make this decision. And, of course, they probably never see a case that way. But in the DOMA case, I think that... they made the decision as narrowly as possible and just opened the door to all other kind of legal questions in the process. All right, let's go to Nostradamus right now. Nostradamus, we're just about out of time, but what your perspective on all this or your question for Steve. Thanks for calling from headquarters.
I have an interesting question for Steve. I don't know if you know this, Steve. Aren't there Muslims living in America right now with multiple wives? And if they are, how does our government view them?
I do not know the answer to that question. I don't know if there are Muslims living with multiple wives right now.
I'm certain there are.
There may be, but again, that, you know, violates the definition of marriage in any state.
It's probably
so. It would be illegal even if they're doing it.
The place to look would be probably in Michigan up there, where a lot of Muslims were settled during the Iraq War. But the question would be, it's probably don't ask, don't tell type of thing like that.
Because I know they're redefining the paperwork you have to fill out for schools. Instead of mother, father, it's parent one, parent two.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking with these Muslim families, it's going to have to be parent three, parent four, parent
four,
five,
six. Yeah. Exactly.
Nonetheless, it does open the door to this sort of thing. You know, the Supreme Court in their attempt to be as narrow as possible basically threw open the door to a whole lot of legal issues.
Well, here's a real interesting thing, and this follows up on what Nostradamus just said. You also have an administration right now in Washington that is highly sympathetic to Muslims in many, many ways. And so Obama, you know, yesterday he called the lesbian couple in New York and congratulated them after the decisions came down. If Muslims do go forward now and say, we want to be recognized and we want, you know, legally to be allowed to have more than one wife, to have up to four, what's Obama going to do? Is he going to be for that or against it? Again, if he's going to be consistent, he's going to support that as well.
Okay. That is Steve Gushov from the Liberty Council. He will be speaking Sunday from 2 to 3:30 p.m. in front of the United States Courthouse, which is on West Central Avenue, just on the west side of I-4 in downtown Orlando. Fortnight for Freedom rally. It's being sponsored by the East Side Tea Party. Please come on down and hear Steve speak and show your support for the Liberty Council and for religious liberty. Stand up for religious liberty.
Steve, are you telling me that you would ever want to tell Barack Obama's daughter she can't have two husbands? Now, are you
I'd love
that
to tell her that,
man?
But is Dad going to tell her that?
It's
a bigger question.
It's interesting that in Islam, and I presume it was the same way in Mormons, it doesn't work the other way. It's only one man and a bunch of wives.
Yeah, it works out really good for the men, I guess. I don't know what you do with more than one wife.
The whole idea behind polygamy, it was for the Mormons, it is for the Muslims, is to produce as many children as possible.
Baby factories.
Into the faith. Good night, folks.